latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Summer is one of the best times for serious horse players to bet their races. Saratoga and Del Mar are in full swing, along with other top tracks like Gulfstream and Laurel, and ExpressBet puts them all at your fingertips. Plus, ExpressBet customers can play in exclusive tournaments and promotions this summer, and new customers can earn a $500 sign-up bonus. Visit ExpressBet.com today. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. Racelens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Echobase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats Racelens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
I can't stop shaking. The room has a groove and the floor is almost earthquaking. Look what we're making. History out on the floor and it's just a
a little before 10 o'clock. And actually, somebody, I think it was Chris, last night on Twitter asked me, I guess he listened to the podcast from Thursday because we played it going into Steve Haskin. He said, who was that that led into Haskin? Cairo Emerald, who's actually Dutch. She doesn't sound Dutch. We almost got in Dutch with Catherine Day Phillips, because I was supposed to reach her 20 minutes ago, but Catherine, I apologize. Michael Dickinson at the very last minute said, I'm available at 9:30. And I said, well, let me get Michael in here. And I had a feeling it wasn't going to be a brief conversation. Good morning.
Good morning. It normally isn't with Michael.
I've seen him a number of occasions, kind of hold court, around the racetrack, and he's been invading up to Woodbine since coming back full time.
He did, and fortunately we met up with him on Saturday and we're the wrong end of a dirty head with his horse and Katie Baby, so we had a drink afterwards, but he was buying.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to follow up Haverkamp with that result. But let's talk about what happened Friday, because right off the start of the Saratoga season, you bring back Mr. Haverkamp. What a satisfying performance, I imagine, for you and for the Fitzhenrys.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, coming off a layoff, it was, asking a lot of him to, to ship down to Saratoga and to run, tough, tough company. But he was up to the task. He was more up to the task than my, I was nervous for him, but he didn't seem to be too fussed. He was good.
How much concern was there over what was happening, weather-wise and the turf course-wise?
We'd had a lot of rain, but Friday was really, when I flew in actually Friday morning, and I knew that there had been some rain. I didn't realize quite how much. And when I got there and I looked at the, you know, the course, and I saw the dirt looked like it was in, you know, decent shape. And then I pulled up the changes and I saw that everything was off the turf. I thought, oh my God, what's happened that I didn't know about? And so I was a little concerned, but it was sunny and the wind was blowing, and you know, it really was a nice chance for the course to dry out, and the course was fresh. It was obviously only the second day of the meet, and so, you know, I was you know, hopeful that the course would be in good shape by the time we ran.
Well, and he had, in his career, I mean, he's only run 12 times coming into, you know, into Friday, but he did catch what was described as a yielding course in the Play the King, and that came, you know, last summer, and you know, obviously every turf course a little bit different, you know, depending on sand based and, you know, depending on, you know, the way in which they drain and so forth. But, you know, that had to give you a little bit of confidence about his ability to handle something with, you know, where he could dig his toes in.
For sure. I went back and was rereading his form, and exactly that stood out is he obviously liked the yielding course, and he's run well in the fall on fall turf, which is a little different than, you know, rock hard summer turf. So, you know, I thought that he would enjoy the cut in the ground for sure.
The other part of this that I think we got to touch on is drawing the nine hole and how much of a challenge, you know, given his up close stalking style, how much of a concern was that as well going in, and especially, you know, the fact that you were going a mile, not that he isn't effective at a mile, but you know, you had to know you were going to lose some ground around the first turn at the very least.
Yeah, that, I mean, obviously being on a tighter course, you know, the inner turf at Saratoga is something that he hadn't experienced. But then in hindsight, he'd run and drawn the inside previous two races of starts in New York and had been a little bit, you know, hurt by being on the inside and just wasn't, you know, able to get a position and wasn't really able to get comfortable on the inside. So, you know, in hindsight, it was a very good draw for us in hindsight, but I was concerned that, you know, he would have to use them a little bit going into that first turn to get a position.
Well, there's a mitigating factor too, and that is, frankly, Junior Alvarado, who has really put on some exceptional rides to start the meet, and this one included.
Yep, I mean, Junior for sure is, I met him, you know, for the first time over Mr. Haverkamp at the Forbidden Apple 2018, and, you know, he was, you know, riding well at the time, but he's really, really riding well right now. So he had the advantage of knowing, you know, Mr. Haverkamp, and when he got off, he said, you know, I'm really glad that I'd ridden him once before because I knew, you know, I knew him a little bit, and that really, you know, made a difference. So that was, that all worked out well.
Now, this ends up being a nice mutual score for those that jumped aboard, including Tom Amos. I don't know if it got back to you that
Amos, did hear that.
Right? Amos, yeah. Picked him out
and
said he was going to be dangerous. Catherine, what has more or less, you know, what delayed the start of his career to begin with that didn't, you know, turn up until he was three, but, you know, 13 starts in essentially, you know, a little less than what, 2.5 years. So, that's not such an interrupted
career. Careful with him.
Yeah.
We've been careful with him. He was really immature as a 2-year-old. His knees were wide open. So we weren't really able to breathe him and gave him, you know, a month off, 6 weeks off, and turned him out as a 2-year-old and brought him back and re-x-rayed his knees in the fall, and they were still wide open. So, you know, it didn't make any sense to carry on. So he, you know, ended up with the winter off as his 2 to 3-year-old year. And then as a 3-year-old, he really, you know, developed well. He was, you know, going into the Queen's Plate. We had two other horses going into the Queen's Plate, and he hadn't started yet, and he looked twice as good as they looked. I mean, he looked like he should be going in the Queen's Plate, not the other two that were, you know, already stakes winners. So he, you know, he sort of marched through his first two conditions, and I sort of had in mind the Saranac, which is, he reminded me a bit of Jambalaya, and Jambalaya went to the Saranac, and so that's sort of how we ended up, you know, how it worked out and taking that pass. He ran a big race in Saratoga at the Saranac, but was, you know, pretty green. It was only a third lifetime start, And in that race was Voodoo Song, Bricks and Mortar, Yoshida. It was, you know, really stacked, stacked race in hindsight. Yep. And, you know, in the paddock and watching the horses in the holding barn before going to the paddock, I was, you know, he seemed like a, you know, a boy among men, really. But I remember a friend of mine said, don't worry, he'll be fine. And I felt like I put him in the wrong class or something at school. I put him in, you know, maybe grade 9, and he should have been in grade 4. But he was, he ran well and got a lot of experience out of it, and then came back to Toronto and did very well in the fall of his 3-year-old year.
He's an interesting horse, and you haven't been afraid to, you know, try certain distances, mile and an eighth, notably. And, you know, frankly, if you take the Fort Lauderdale out of the equation, which mile and an eighth on, although that day they called it good, so there might have been
it
a little
poured
bit of
rain. It was a funny course. It was very funny. It was at the beginning of the meet, and the heavens literally opened up, and there was water sort of on top of the turf, if that sort of makes sense. It was really, it was an unusual, and Johnny Vasquez rode him and said he couldn't get his, you know, feet underneath him. He said he, you know, on the dirt, he warmed up, he felt amazing. He was, you know, really excited. And when he got on the turf, he said he just kind of was swimming around there and didn't really, he's got a great big wide flat foot, and he just at no point really got his legs underneath him. So it, just kind of throwing that race out, and we gave him a break off of that, and that was the end of any Pegasus dreams that day. But, you know, we gave him a break. He went to Ocala for 6 weeks, and you know, we brought him back to be where we are now.
Who handles the turnouts like that for you in Ocala?
Lisa McGreevy had him at her farm. She has a small farm.
Nice.
Perfect for, you know, what I wanted, a very hands-on and, you know, lots of attention. So she did a great job with him, and then sent him back to us we were in Palmettos. And so he joined us in Palmettos, and then we, you know, carried on and came back up to Woodbine with him.
Well,
started breathing up here.
You mentioned that Saranac, and I'm looking up and down, and he has, this is 8 wins and 13 career starts. And obviously, you know, the Fort Lauderdale, where he ended up, you know, ended up last. So we put a line through that. He has only been beaten by top horses. Voodoo Song, Yoshida, Bricks and Mortar, you mentioned. Kingsport beat him. Of course, there ended up being a DQ, but Kingsport beat him that day in the Sir Barton at Woodbine. Then Projected, Offering Plan, Oscar Performance. He's kept top company, Catherine.
Yeah. No, that was when I was nervous on Friday before the race, and I looked at his form and looked at the horses he'd been running against, and you know, took a deep breath and realized that he did fit there.
Well, distance, I mean, this, you feel like you're going to concentrate on the mile through the summer and fall?
I think so. You know, the Woodbine Mile has been our goal really all along. And sort of backing up from that, that's really how we got to the Forbidden Apple. It was, you know, good timing. And it probably would have preferred to stay home, but again, it worked out the way it was meant to work out. But that'll give him one more race before the mile, which is, I felt the Play the King was maybe a little tight with just being 3 weeks between the Play the King and the mile last year. So we were looking to run a little earlier in August and be ready for the mile. Fresh.
Nice. Well, Mr. Haverkamp, a Court Vision gelding that feels like he'll be around and, you know, proving, you know, more and more versatile and tactical.
Yeah, he's a fun horse. Yeah. He's a really fun horse. He's a fun horse to be around. He's got a ton of personality, and you know, we're very, very fortunate to be part of him.
Well, and you know, you referenced Jambalaya earlier, and I don't know if it got back to you, but on air, this must have been when we were at Ocala for OBS March, I think, maybe. It was in one of the conversations with Mark Cassie. I mean, Cassie's almost like a co-host this year on the show. He told the story. He told the Jambalaya story.
Well, I'm sure there's a few versions of that story, but yes.
All right, let's get your version. What happened that day in the sale after the sales ring? What happened?
Well, going back, it was when the repository was new, and all the X-rays in were very new, and the reports were new, and it hadn't really been fine-tuned. And we went to see Jambalaya, or the Muskrat Susie baby, because we'd had Heated Up, which is a filly that we'd bought quite inexpensively, and she won a grade three. So we were, you know, quite excited to see this Canadian bred by Langfer, and it, you know, by Langfer, he wasn't very commercial. We thought we had a chance to, you know, buy him for, you know, 30,000 or 40,000 was what we were sort of hoping. And he was a great big gawky, big footed, kind of a funny looking horse, but had a great walk. So of course we get up, and I forgot to, you know, do the repository. And so they had a book, and the book, I opened the page to see what the notes were on. The entire page was full. I said, "Oh my gosh." I turned to Todd. I said, "What does this mean?" I said, "The whole page is full." So I said, "There's a line that's not full." He said, "Catherine, there's a ditto to the line above it." I'm like, "Oh my God, what does this even mean?" Like, it was, you know, it was confusing, and you know, we hadn't really had dealt with a lot of these repositories at the time. So I mean, I'm humming, and the horse is walking around, and you know, it's just, it's kind of all confusing. And yeah, next thing you know, the horse goes in the ring and nobody bids on the horse. And Todd and I are looking, do we bid? Do we not bid? Like, what do we do? And Mark walks by and he sticks his hand up and he buys him for $2,500. And we were friends, and he looked at me and said, you know, he's a Canadian bred. He's worth it. If you want him, take him. If not, I'll take him. And so, and then Todd and I looked at each other and you know, we sort of said, well, okay, we'll take him. And that's our version of it. But we got him home, and we were afraid to turn him out because we thought all the four legs might just fall right off. We didn't know what would happen if we turned him out. And everyone said, "Oh, you bought a nice Langfer for 25." We're like, "Yes, we paid 25. We were afraid to say 100, not 1,000. But anyhow, it turns out he was perfectly fine. And, you know, it was in the early days of the repository when, you know, before they had maybe simplified it a little bit.
That's the same. That's pretty much the story that Mark told it. And I had not heard it at any before this year.
Yeah. It's funny. I mean, we definitely like the horse. Would we have bought him without Mark, being there? We may have been I would say we probably would have been too scared to have done anything. We probably would have just stood looking at each other like dopes, and he would have, I don't know, been R&A'd or something for no bid. But anyhow,
it's,
I guess things happen the way they're meant to happen.
Well, I suppose Mr. Chicken Dance would have taken him home, and you know, he would have.
Well, I guess in hindsight, they had left the sale because it was quite late in the sale, and apparently a reserve wasn't put in that was supposed to be put in, or something happened. It wasn't supposed to be sold. That was after he, you know, had done so well. But it's funny. He's on our farm. He's retired, and he looks amazing. He's healthy and turned out with a bit of gold, and so yeah, I see them every day, and my husband looks after them every day, and they're doing well, both of them.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
You're
two biggest earners of your career, and the multiple stake winners, I suppose the FitzHenrys might want to take Mr. Haverkamp home.
Well, they don't have a farm, but
they don't have a farm.
No, they don't have a farm. Mr. Haverkamp will always have a home with us.
Nice.
He'll always have a home with us. He's a special horse.
I love it. Since we're checking in on everybody, how's your father?
I think fine. He's retired, and I think he's taken a leaning towards the show horses these days. So we don't see him at the track very much.
Okay, I just wanted to check in, and you know, great to tell you were part of an invading contingent at Saratoga. You guys, between you and Keneally, Ben Cecil and O'Neill, you didn't leave much for the New York trainers.
The shippers did well. Well, I don't know. Maybe we'll have to go back again then if that worked.
Well, we hope so. And I'm sorry I missed you Friday, Catherine, but delighted to have this visit, and continued success. Looking forward to Mr. Haverkamp, and also, you know, we shouldn't give a little attention. You mentioned the matron. You ran two in there actually on Saturday.
We did. Katie Baby was she's sort of the rising star of the fillies in our barn, and she hasn't won a stake yet, and she's been very close three times now. She's I think about a neck away from three stakes wins. So, but she'll get it organized and get there shortly. She's very nice. A nice filly by Curlin.
And Dixie Moon. Why do we know Dixie Moon's name?
Dixie Moon won the Canadian Oaks and beat Wonderful Dot. That was sort of her big deal. She's won I think five stake races. And she's just maybe a little bit. I don't know. She's kind of in a funny thing. She's going to go to the farm and have a little break for. You know, we might try her back on the turf, but she's just kind of not that happy on the synthetic, or just, you know, maybe, I'm not sure. She just needs a little bit of a break, I guess.
Well, and now and then I just looked at the PPs from Saturday. This is the Curlin daughter, now four out of Dixie Chicken.
Which is a homebred, and I think she's a third generation homebred for the Fitzhenrys. We actually raised Dixie Chicken herself. She was the first horse that we had for the Fitzhenrys, and she was a small filly, nasty little filly, but has thrown two nice runners in Guy Caballero and Dixie Moon. She's a nice 2-year-old right now that Roger Atfield has that's training well and should be running, I would think, in the next few weeks.
Well, they have to name, if they've got, you know, she is Dixie Chicken, she has to have a baby that somebody names Tennessee Lamb.
I know. Isn't that, no, it wasn't her baby. They weren't sisters, but they were the two that they bred that year were Dixie Chicken and Tennessee Lamb. And Lamb was by Medaglia d'Oro. And she went to a different trainer, and we ended up with Dixie Chicken. And I kept making the argument that it really needed to be side by side. It just made sense, you know, in the barn.
Yes.
And have Dixie Chicken and Tennessee Lamb. But anyhow, that didn't work out for me. But we did end up with her babies, and she's had obviously Mr. Haverkamp, and she had the first foal out of her. She's died. The first foal was a horse named Tallboy Tuesday, who won his debut by 10 lengths at least, and got an 87 buyer, and was really lovely. When he got hurt, unfortunately, never ran again. He just ran the one time.
That's the worst. It worked out for McLean's Music, but he's one of the few that kind of storyline happened. Let me ask you about that one more thing. This rounds mine, the Not Bourbon filly, coming back for his second start this week.
Her first start was she didn't love dirt in her face, and of course then she also wasn't very fast out of the gate, which did not work out well for her first start. So she walked out of the gate and got, you know, a field of 14 kicked back into her face, and she dropped out of it probably 20 or 30 lengths. It was just a complete embarrassment. And then she kind of gave herself a shake and got into gear, and she made up a ton of ground, and I think was only beaten 5 lengths in the end. So we've since worked from the gate again, and we have since put blinkers on. I think she will be a little more prepared, and going 7-8 should help a bit too for Wednesday night.
Very nice. And it's funny, this is the second mention of Charlie Fipke today, because Mr. Fipke has got some horses with Michael Dickinson, and he bred this one, Ontario bred, out of the Roman Ruler mare, Tuscan Chianti. And boy, this is liquor over wine. That's kind of that. So there's the name.
We won't complain about that.
There's something for everybody. Kingfield Racing and Fullerton Stables. Tell us about the owners.
The owners, the Fullertons are dear friends of ours, Paul and Al Fullerton, and they're kind of new in the game, and they own a piece of this horse and another filly that we race called Notice Me, and she's had a couple of wins, and she's a nice filly too, an Ontario bred as well. They're kind of new in the game and have dabbled in a few pieces here and there, and it's fun. I think they're actually away this weekend, so they won't see a race, but hopefully we'll get them out to the races again soon.
This round's mine tomorrow at Woodbine. Catherine, it's always a pleasure. Well done. Congratulations.
Thank you very much, Steve, and thanks for having me on the show.
Not at all. Catherine Day Phillips, everybody, and she came down and got the money. as they say. And that's been that's been a steady drumbeat so far these first 4 days of Saratoga. What have we had? 1, 2, 3, 6 stakes and 4 out-of-towners. Only Brad Cox, and technically Brad Cox brought one in from Churchill, brought in the Klein Philly, of course, break even to win. So by all rights, only Chad Brown with Sister Charlie, the only, quote-unquote New York-based winner. Amazing. Of a stake so far. Well, Pete Fornatale has been taking it all in and has already been busy. I suppose that these 2 days off that you've maximized already what the 2 days mean. Good morning, Pete Fornatale.
Good morning to you. Indeed, Steve. I mean, I don't know that there's anybody who appreciates this extra off day more than me, honestly, in terms of everything everything cooking with broadcasting and just life things. And yesterday it was wonderful to just have a day, not a crazy day, but a day getting things done. And where, unlike years past when you knew you just couldn't stop on the dark day because if the laundry didn't get done or that workout didn't get in or that room, the office didn't get straightened, it wasn't going to happen for another week. It was like, okay, yeah, I've done enough. I can actually take a deep breath and finally check out that book about Astral Weeks and Van Morrison in 1968. I had an hour to sit on the couch and read. It was magnificent, Steve. And today will be a little busier. A lot of interviews coming up for upcoming broadcasts and new potential farm partnerships and things like that. But it's just nice to be able to take a deep breath and feel like you're not falling behind. And I think, you know, that's going to be the biggest difference. I'm not saying we're not going to fall behind at all, but to have some semblance of the ability to catch up, take a deep breath, and just live a little bit more consciously up here and enjoy a little bit more even when we're working. And that's something I'm really super-duper looking forward to for the rest of today and for the rest of the meet. And, of course, it also is going to allow the opportunity for some travel. I think I'm going to actually have a chance to get over to Maine for a couple of days next week, which I'm also looking forward to being able to do. So I'm a huge fan. So far, so good. I imagine for you it's better, but you know, you're still broadcasting every day, so I don't know if you get to feel it as acutely.
Well, in terms of spreading out, and I said yesterday that when I got to the set to do Loose on the Lead with Seth on Sunday, for starters, I didn't have to really do too much finish work on Sunday. I mean, sometimes you end up, I'm scurrying really to make the final adjustments on Sunday. And I didn't have to worry about sitting there, for another hour and a half, 2 hours to get ahead on start on Monday's card. And, you say fall behind it, it's easy to happen. And I just was that much more relaxed, Pete, on Sunday, frankly. It's going to be really well received, and everybody's going to come and maintain their freshness, I think, going forward into the rest of the summer. And so we'll keep offering ideas, things to do. And in fact, Tina and I are going to take got a little pool action later, and then we're continuing on our kitchen remodel project, and we have to go look at some perspective designs. So
I like it.
Making the most ourselves of the days off. Pete, let's talk some impressions about the racing, and then we'll look at some of the contest results from the weekend. What did you think of the first 4 days, the first 10% of the meet from a racing standpoint?
There was an element of Belmont North, but not in a bad way. I mean, it was good quality racing. It was a step up in quality in the New York circuit to what we've been seeing for the last few weeks. We had six stakes races in 4 days. I mean, that ain't bad. And we had a race like the A Other Than with Ketchabid and Varenka that might as well have been a stakes race. I was overall impressed. I mean, It just depends on what idea you hold in your head. For people who hold on to the idea of what Saratoga was when it was a 24-day meet, they're bound to be disappointed, right? But when you think about the real world and the in which we live and the fact that we get to be up here for 40 days, I thought if you take you look at it through a realistic lens, it was really good. I enjoyed it thoroughly, and I think we saw some storylines for the meet starting to be drawn that are gonna play out over the course of the next 8 weeks. It was fun seeing American Pharoah get his first Saratoga winner. That was a storyline that I enjoyed. I mean, the Diana and the tactics and the way that unfolded, I think it's going to be really fun to see what happens with those three superstar fillies who ran 1-2-3 and where they're going to be heading the rest of the way. On balance, I enjoyed it very much. You know, we're three good weather days to one bad weather day. That's not a horrible proposition. Hopefully we can stay more to the good, and I think as the meet goes on, things are going to hopefully just continue to get better and better as we get to more of the traditional races that make Saratoga so great. I assume you were pleased all in all as well.
Oh yeah, no, I had a very good, very nice few opening days, including we had our little filly run on Saturday, ran very well, came charging late, yep. Very satisfied with that effort. So that was a good way to start from a racing standpoint, and in terms of horseplay, I. If I was smart, I wouldn't make another bet the rest of the meet. But,
that, what are the odds of that happening?
Well, the zero. The odds are zero. But well, we are. Tell you what, I'm going to be at Monmouth for Haskell Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So, I guess I'm still going to play Thursday. I mean, I'm handicapping everything, so I guess we'll still play. But I'm maybe not. Maybe this is good that I'm going to go out of town and not be right there on track. That might keep some of that early headway in the in the pocket. I think that's a good plan. Speaking of making headway, we're making headway during the summer contest opportunities. Let's get some reviews in.
We had a couple of important events last weekend at both LoSal, and the second of those two contests at LoSal went down. And then we also had Arlington, and a familiar name at the top of the leaderboard at LoSal. With Nate Newby, we talked about him last week a little bit, and then he goes and gets the job done and wins and ends up getting an NHC seat. Cheryl Kaufman, another NHC seat winner out of that LoSal event, and also Len Henson. Those are all NHC veterans and players whose names we've seen over the years. And then LoSal do a cool thing that Santa Anita have done at times as well. So something that I'm hoping is going to pick up steam. There was a churn prize offered, and Mark Streif ended up winning that. His $300 bankroll, he ended up handling $1,700 during the contest and winning a cash award for that. They had 96 entries total. That's on the heels of the 120 last week. So Orlando Gutierrez out there doing a great job and continuing to build LoSal as another a prong in the fork of those Southern California contests. Of course, we've got the big Del Mar contest coming up out there, and also we talked about it a little bit last week, this LRF Cares contest on July 20th, which is, as it turns out, you're going to have to be at Del Mar Live to participate in it. That's different than what I said last week. But if you're in the Billy, Southern California area, yeah.
Billy's going to be with us next, actually. Billy Cotter.
Oh, fantastic. He'll give you all the details on that and how to get involved. But I just want to underline, I think that's a great opportunity and a chance to win in, and then you get to play in the contest on the 27th. Meanwhile, out at Arlington, we had one Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge seat awarded and three NHC seats. Joseph Whitaker was the winner of the BCBC seat, followed by Philip Weber, Pat Gianforte, a Chicago area horse player regular, and Henry Wessel, the third to get an NHC seat out of Arlington. That's an event people ship in for that one, Steve. I know Nick Tamaro made the journey to Chicago. I think Pat Cummings as well, looking to have an opportunity to win just added NHC seats in a contest that I think it's 2,000, and you just bet. You don't have to put in extra to pay for those seats. Arlington add them, so that adds to the intrigue. So the summer contest season definitely underway, and some more interesting things coming up. Now, I should have asked you about this off air. I don't know, maybe talking out of school here, but I heard a rumor there might be an exciting contest coming up this summer that you're somehow involved in, Steve. Are you prepared to talk about that yet?
Well, I mentioned earlier, and we've threatened this for, I don't know, the last 3 years, I think, and I got the mechanics of it from the NHC team, and we'll have all the specifics will come out tomorrow. It's basically a beat the host style, and there'll be qualifiers all summer. One race, I'll pick a horse, and everybody else will pick, and a bunch of qualifying leading up to a finale, Labor Day weekend, for one seat, and we will send somebody all expenses paid.
That's awesome. That's so cool. It's been so fun covering the NHC out there with you these last few years anyway, and it'll be fun that you'll have a de facto runner in the race there with the person who wins in via the show. And all a free roll, I assume?
Yeah, we'll get all the details. I'm still reading the specifics, but there'll be a press release tomorrow. And
awesome. Well, we'd love to promote it on the In the Money Players podcast and through social media because it sounds like a great opportunity. And I love expanding your involvement in the contest world wherever possible. So kudos on coming up for something creative, and happy to help you get the word out there to the contest world and beyond.
I appreciate it. Give everybody your schedule this week in terms of the little handicapping show and the cast.
I want to see more people in person. We had great numbers for the podcast part of the Saturday show, but it was fairly, we had a few people there. There was a little applause, but I think it's a good opportunity. I would recommend come out in the morning on Saturday, watch the morning works. They wrap up, and then 9:30 to 10, JK and I will be at the Don Julio Bandstand. That's the bandstand right in the backyard next – not really the backyard, just right behind
the paddock. That's the paddock court. That's the main center.
Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah.
Think Dunkin' Donuts, and you're right there. Come see us. We're doing – it's the podcast, but we're doing it live, and we've got some seats, and it's a good – it's good vibes, and I think people will enjoy to come check that out. If you can't get there, you do have the option. Subscribe to the In the Money Players podcast wherever you get your podcast, iTunes, SoundCloud, etc., and it'll pop up. That'll be our Naira Bet show that pops up in that feed. And then, other than that, going to be still – I did a weekend review yesterday that published up there. We'll be looking ahead. We got a big Monmouth special coming up, as you might imagine. We've got Brian Skirka and Frank Miramati booked as guests for later in the week. We'll be talking all about the stakes at Monmouth and looking at the other big stuff happening across the country. And, of course, Del Mar, with Del Mar opening. We won't be giving that short shrift either. And then the final leg in the stool, as it were, in the Ring Pedigree podcast. You'll have a chance to tune in and listen to that. We haven't booked guests yet for that one. Thursday seems – it's Tuesday. Thursday still seems like it's more than 2 days away somehow. So I better get on that, but – we've been having fun trying to take a look into the – it's a little more industry insidery stuff, and we try to reach out for some voices that don't always have a chance to get heard in the bigger racing media such as yourself. So we're trying to find a little niche for ourselves there as well. But, yeah, looking forward to it. Looking a little bit further ahead, one day to keep in mind is July 30th, where we're doing this Gumbo for the Horses event with the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation at the Racing City Brewery. If you're interested in getting tickets to that, check out trfinc.org/players. We're going to have a good time. We've got the Chip Gio shipping in from Louisiana to prepare the gumbo. It should be a blast.
Very cool. I love it. I love it. And then, of course, the final topic that needs to be addressed is the sartorial this sartorial conflagration it doesn't take much on Twitter to create a firestorm. It could be something as little as encouraging people to, you know, not be put off by wet weather. That seems to draw ire. But in this case, Jonathan's clothing is now being debated. You know, at least he wasn't up for a role in a Disney movie.
Oh, the tempest in a teapot never ceases social media, dude. My usual attitude about this stuff is, you know, I view it as people complaining about stuff like that. I mean, some of them might, I don't know. It's borderline trollish behavior, and generally my attitude, as many people know, is don't feed the trolls. But this one, I thought there were some relevant points to make about how I thought it was great to have somebody up there just, I mean, it's great to dress nice at the races. I mean, Steve's one of the, as we've said before, one of the best dressed men at the track, and I appreciate that for sure. But you know, especially when it comes to playing the horses, you got to be you, and you don't want to put a square peg into a round hole or vice versa. And so for JK, you know, who I think it's great that he's up there and he just looks like somebody you'd see in the backyard at Saratoga, and I, you know, obviously he's not trying to, he's not, the implication was there was some ego or something involved. No, this was by request. This isn't somebody trying to go to the royal enclosure in a jumpsuit. This is an encouraged behavior. And my favorite bit I had, I don't know why this, I did not have the free time to do this, but I went ahead and looked at the profile pictures of the people who had criticized Jonathan's attire, and let me just say, I'm no Carson Kressley or fashion expert, but even I noticed some faux pas in those profile pictures from a fashion point of view. So if you live in a glass house, people, don't be throwing rocks.
I've never objected to the to the clothes, the footwear. I
Oh, I've made fun of the footwear on many.
The footwear is, if he's looking for footwear clues, he should emulate Scott Hazelton, or as we call him, Scott Hazeltony.
Well, I told you, he saved my bacon. I think I mentioned this on air, that he absolutely saved my bacon at Ascot. I, being a, you know, fashionable man that he is, I was just looking for advice on how to do the 5 days, and he just coached me up about exactly how to do it. And I ended up looking better and saving all this money. So, you know, on the storied resume of Scott Hazelton, he can now add a line at the bottom, fashion consultant. And it's absolutely true.
Pete Fornatel, everybody, looms boldly and looming largely at Saratoga all summer with all kinds of fun and some frivolity, some serious, a lot of places that Pete will turn up around the racetrack and reach out and interact freely. Pete, I appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Folks should definitely reach out. I can help. That's the other thing I'm doing, is helping book tables over at the paddock bar downstairs, upstairs. If you want a little private party for a great price, reach out at Looms Boldly. We'll get you sorted out and help enrich your Saratoga experience. That's what it's all about.
Pete Fornatel, everybody. Let's we're not going to take a break. We're going to stay right here because there's just too many people to talk to today. And we'll just take probably one more break at the top of the hour, and that'll be it. But we'll stay right here because Billy Koch, standing by and gonna be getting very excited about opening day at Del Mar. Del Mar didn't have to change its schedule around, and the whole season gets underway. One of the most anticipated opening days in the sport. Billy Koch joins us from Little Red Feather. Good morning.
Morning, Steve. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. And yes, we're very excited around here.
Well, we're also excited, we can call you at any time to discuss anything that's happening, and we'll talk about some of the larger, you know, more pressing issues. But you're doing something with Little Red Feather. LRF Cares, you know, kind of the charity division of Little Red Feather, that really is wonderful. And I want to give the handicapping challenge as much exposure as possible.
Absolutely, Steve. Thanks very much. Yeah, it's our first ever LRF Cares Handicapping Challenge. It takes place on track at Del Mar this Saturday, July 20th. It's in the Pacific Classic Room, but you don't have to go to the Pacific Classic Room. You just need to sign up. It's a $500 buy-in, $250 live bankroll, and $250 in the entry fee. And with the coolest part, Steve, is that there are amazing prizes. $8,000 entry into the Del Mar Handicapping Challenge, and two NHC entries, which is, I just heard you talking about all the how great the NHC is, and Nate Newby, I'm so happy for him that he qualified. But those are huge prizes for an on-track tournament like this, a challenge, and it's going to be amazing because it also benefits aftercare, and that's what LRF Cares does. Is we make sure that all of our Little Red Feather horses always have a place to go once their careers are over, and we also take care of things. You know, obviously, San Luis Rey Fire, we helped out with that. We help out with Karma, who is the major aftercare program out here in Southern California. So it's a great event. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have a lot of different personalities in there that you'll see, and it's something that we're looking forward to.
Well, this has got a lot of different elements to it. You mentioned some of the top line, the $500 buy-in, $250 live bank, $250 entry fee, which you know, heads toward the charity portion, but free clubhouse admission when you come in, and you know, obviously you keep whatever whatever you win. That's one of the benefits,
right,
of a bankroll, live bankroll.
Yeah, it's great.
NHC tour points as well, and you know, people. You know, if you haven't been to Del Mar and you want to get involved, you know, right away, here's your chance. The first Saturday of the meet.
Yeah, it's gonna be a lot of fun, Steve. There's gonna be a lot of people out there playing, and the more the merrier. And you can go right to the Del Mar website. There's a whole link to the handicapping challenge. If you want to do something very simple rather than doing a whole a website on the air, just Google search LRF Cares. That's LRF and then CARES, and you'll just come up. The site will for the challenge will come up. It'll take you right to the Del Mar site where you can sign up right there. You put your credit card in, and you show up on Saturday, and you play. Steve, I don't have an NHC seat yet, so I'm serious. I'm trying.
Oh, nice. Well, and I'm going to also add, and I'm going to put the link up. I'll link it out for everybody on Twitter.
Awesome.
And also on Facebook. But lrfcares@gmail.com. You can get a hold of Renee Parcell, with any questions or, you know, any concerns and, you know, any details, arrangements that you know, you might need to make. lrfcares@gmail.com for Renee. You can also reach out to Billy, obviously, on Twitter.
Oh, anytime. Call me up.
You know, exactly. And of course, Little Red Feather on their website. It's all over the place, actually. Between the Del Mar website, I saw that Ray Pollock had put it out there as a, you know, as a press release too, so it's a Pollock Report. Pretty much anywhere you look, you're going to find it. So, nice opportunity. LRF Cares Handicapping Challenge on Saturday at Del Mar. Looking forward to the draws tomorrow for the first Saturday of the meet. And also some overall themes, Billy. As we've said for weeks now, we had the three, the three weekend sessions at Los Alamitos, which gave everybody a little bit of a period of decompression after just the worst 6 months in California racing history. Some thoughts about, you know, getting into some sort of normalcy downstate.
Steve, I don't know if we're ever going to be back in normalcy. I think the landscape has changed, and the climate that we're in now, even when you go out in the mornings, I think, and everybody watches workouts differently. We watch races a little differently out here now. And I think everybody is on their game. And you have to be. And you have to be willing to change and adapt. And it's unfortunate what has happened, and it's going to take a little time to move on. And hopefully Del Mar will breathe a breath of fresh air into all of us, because we need it. And you can see it. There's still lingering effects, and I don't think it's going to go away right away. But like I said, I think the people out here, especially the trainers, the owners, and everyone at the track, we're doing our best to just make sure that these reforms go into place, that we're doing everything possible for the safety of the animal. And that's our number one goal. That needs to be our number one goal. We need to be accountable. And I think if we do that, and do it to the best of our ability, we're going to be okay. But I think, you know, time heals all wounds, Steve, you know that. But it's going to take a little time. And like I said, but when we get to opening day and it's 75 degrees and sunny and got the beach right there and you got great racing on opening day and all through the Del Mar meet, I think we're going to be okay.
In terms of the most controversial aftermath of the Santa Anita season, the situation that the Stronach Group has placed Jerry Hollendorfer in. And I'm just curious, Billy, from your standpoint, and as somebody who has got horses with a lot of different trainers, why has there not been a greater outcry from Connections? Because how is singling out Jerry Hollendorfer any different than singling out your own Phil D'Amato or Richard Baltus on whims?
Yeah, you know, Jerry, Steve, that's a good point. I don't know. I don't know why there's not a bigger outcry. I think there is behind the scenes. I know there are people working on things as we speak. Personally, I've known Jerry for a long, long time. I know how hard he works. He's single-minded in his focus. He's obviously in the Hall of Fame. I think he deserved better, personally. This is just me talking. I think everybody is entitled to due process. I wasn't crazy about the way it was handled by Santa Anita. But at the same time, Steve, they're a privately owned, privately run facility, and they can make their own decisions. So that was up to them how they handled it. And I can tell you, Steve, and I'm sure this has been said 1,000 times on your show and on all the social media, you know, the whole concept of one horse is too many. And we had a rough spell at Santa Anita there, but I still think it was media driven. I think unfortunately it is the absolute worst part of this game, when a horse goes down. I don't even like to talk about it. I've been there. I've seen it too many times. I mean, I'm 49 years old right now. I'm going to be 50 this year, Steve. I'm joining the 50 club. But I've seen it. You know, I was a little kid when Ruffian broke down. I mean, it was one of the worst days of my life. I still remember it. I remember where I was sitting. And when you're in this game, unfortunately, I think what happens, Steve, is you get a little numb to it. And you learn to cope with it. And then when it hits like this, all those feelings come back, and you want to do everything you can to help. And I think that's what we're trying to do. And that's kind of what I said before, is really focus in on the safety of the animal, do everything we possibly can to protect them, keep them safe. They are everything to the sport. You know, we talk about the horsemen, the gamblers, the handicappers. We're talking about a contest. We're talking about all these things, but it really is the driving force of this industry. It's horse. It's called horse racing. And we want to keep it alive and vibrant. And that was an unfortunate situation with what happened to Jerry. Giving you my 2 cents, I don't know what more I can do. I know there are people behind the scenes that are working with Jerry. And to be honest, I feel bad for him.
Well, it's stunning that other than HBPA and TRA, that no ownership group, whether it's TOBA or whether it's the TOC, CTT, I mean, the silence is deafening, yeah. and it's an embarrassment, because I'm sorry, I understand.
You don't have to apologize.
It's inexcusable that there isn't a louder outcry, other than, from the people that are most closely tied to this. And just because it could easily be you or anybody else. And of course, this is frankly, a bit of a shadow circumstance to, some bigger social things going on, particularly in this country. It could just as easily be any of us. But I guess,
yeah,
I don't know.
Absolutely.
It's very troubling, and it's eating at me, to say the least.
Well, I can hear it in your voice, and I feel it. And I think there are people around here that probably feel the same way you do, Steve. I wouldn't be surprised. Like I said, I know that there are I'm friendly with Drew Kotu, who's representing Mr. Hollendorfer,
sure.
And I know that Drew is working very diligently around the clock to try to help Jerry. And I think there are many supporters out here. I don't know why it's kind of quiet. I can't give you that answer. I'm like you. I don't know.
Well, we just will continue to monitor and see where it goes.
Yeah.
Let's turn back to the racing. And what kind of a summer are you anticipating? Talk about the LRF horses. And
you know, it happens every year, Steve. I think I come on the show at the beginning of summer and I tell you what a great meet we're going to have. And then and I cool it. You know, that's my friend saying, cool it. So I have to be very careful, Steve. I can't cool it. We're really looking forward to this. Marquis Water gets it going for us in the Eddie Reed on Sunday. Secret Spice goes in the Grade One Clement Hirsch a week from Sunday. We got a bunch of the Hunted runs in a Cowbred Stake the next Friday, a week from Friday. We have stake runners like Taurine Dancer, Mirth, who you'll see later in the meet. It's really exciting. We have some really good ship and win possibilities. We have had an unbelievable year this year. We're hitting at a phenomenal clip, and it's really due to our partners. We have the greatest partners in the industry. They're patient and they're supportive, and they really understand the game and what we're trying to do and how we're trying to develop horses. And I think that's really important, Steve. I think we're in a society right now that it's this now society. We want it right now. Why aren't we in this stake race now? Why, people have kind of forgotten about conditions. And in Phil D'Amato and Richie Baltus and Michelle Nevin, I think we have three of the greatest trainers out here right now. They're patient. They're incredible horsemen. And when you match that up with our partners who are so supportive, and when we put a horse out, they jump at the opportunity and they understand and they listen, I think it makes for a good combination. And we're really, really excited to get 2019 Summer Del Mar going.
Well, you mentioned partnerships too. You got tied in with a number of different, other ownership groups. But I know that one going out, I think, Thursday, second day in the Fleet Treat, I saw Opus One was involved.
Yeah, Steve, I don't think we're going to run in there. I think we're going to be play the smart patient card and run the following week in a cowbred allowance long on the grass. We went back and forth with Richie, who trains the filly. She's a really nice filly. She's actually Marky's Water's half-sister.
Right,
and
Richie talked about
that.
And we said,
you know what, she's running so well on grass. She wants to go long, and, they dangled a $150,000 cowbred out there, but it is on dirt, and it is 7 furlongs, and when push came to shove, we just said, let's be smart. Let's wait for the race next week, so we're probably going to come out of there.
Very good. Give us a 2-year-old that is going to run and people should be aware of.
Our first 2-year-old is going to run is named Rip City. He's a city zip that we bought at OBS, and he's going to run the same day as Secret Spice, Sunday the 28th, in a 1-mile grass maiden special weight. Giovanni Franco will ride. I think he's a really nice colt. He's done everything right. He's super cool to be around. He's an athlete. And it's really exciting when your first 2-year-old runs. We have a really nice horse named Rhaegar with Phil D'Amato. He'll probably run later on in the meet. And then we have a 2-year-old filly of Richie Baltus that I'm not sure is going to make it. She's by Take Charge Indy. Her name's AG Indy. And she's training at San Luis Rey right now. But we have some nice ship and win candidates. And it's going to be – we're quiet week one. But we could have as many as 10 horses running on week 2 at Del Mar. So it'll be a lot
Holy
of fun.
Cow. Unbelievable. Well, yeah. In addition, of course, to the stake horses and the babies, a presence socially too. And I'm going to volunteer you. I'm springing this on you live, but our friends at Milton's Deli, Barry Halpern.
I'm sitting right outside of Milton's right now.
Well, go in and see Barry and tell him you're volunteering for the weekend handicapping sessions that we're going to give details later in the week. But Barry has redesigned their party room. They've turned it into the Del Mar Room. Joe Harper donated hundreds of pictures from his private collection that they then put up all through the Del Mar Room. And Felix Taverna is going to host Saturday, Sunday handicapping breakfasts at Milton's. And it should be a tremendous time. And Barry, I go back with Barry and his partners to the time that they first got out to California, and they went out there as college students, Chicago Brothers Pizza. And I founded my business, my food brokerage business, with Barry and Craig Schechtman and the boys, Dave Levy and the whole group. A lot of fun. And when they sold Chicago Brothers, they started Milton's. And so pretty much everything they touch. And those of you that miss Chicago Brothers down there in San Diego, those of you that miss the deep dish pizza, it's a hidden secret.
Hidden gem.
At Milton's, right across from the register, there's that freezer. And Barry they're still making the deep dish pizza that you can take home and bake at home. So, and they have pizza night at Milton's. It's the old Chicago Brothers Pizza.
I love it. Well, I'm right outside, so I'm going to go in and do that right after we get off the air, Steve. But hey, let me tell you. But I really appreciate you having me, and I hope everybody does go check out the LRF Cares Handicapping Challenge this Saturday, Del Mar. You got to be on track. NHC seats available, $8,000 entry into the Del Mar Handicapping Challenge available. It's going to be awesome. Go do it. We'll be there. I'll be handicapping from the veranda. Anybody who's listening, come see us. Say hello. Stop by. You want to learn more about horse racing? Oh, Steve, I forgot. I have my podcast today, Horse Ownership Experience, myself and Michelle Yu, coming back on the air at noon. And we have Joe Harper, so we'll get into it.
Outstanding. Don't harass
Joe.
This whole situation, it was foisted. It was foisted on them, and they're not responsible.
I ask a tough question every once in a while. We'll ask. You can listen live on latalkradio.com, and you can download it. So it's called the Horse Ownership Experience. But Steve, your show dominates, buddy. You're the man.
Thank you. But everybody talking about everybody anywhere talking about horses contributes mightily to everybody's enjoyment of the game. And Billy, the success of Little Red Feather, really outstanding nationwide now, and doing a lot of different things right and for the betterment of the sport. I appreciate it. Best of luck at Del Mar, and likely we'll catch up between you and Phil and Richie. Richie's been on half a dozen times already this year. 6 months.
I know. I heard him last week. You got some good stuff out of him. I was shocked. It was good.
Well, the most important thing was that was the Abbondanza suit, the custom made suits. Start buying custom made suits for your people.
Yeah, you should see him. I went out to dinner with him last night. He already had his Del Mar gear on. He's looking good. He's looking good. Richie's ready.
I love it. I love it.
Thank you, Steve.
I love it. Billy Koch, everybody, always an absolute pleasure. A lot of fun. And LRF Racing is how you follow on Twitter, and the website itself, littleredfeather.com. Billy Koch, one of our favorite people. It's pretty amazing. I'm thinking about 15 years here and doing this, and got to know Billy early on when it came to Singletary. That was one of our favorite horses, and of course he won before the show, but those were the early days. And LRF is really, they've got a lot of formulas. They do a lot of different things too. It's not just the racing. You've heard Billy talk about the pin hooking. that has been a huge success. He and partner Gary Fenton, they waded into that area. Partners were curious about pin hooking. They've made that a part of the LRF experience. Billy, just irrepressible. Let's take a break. Going to come back top of the hour. It is Andy Serling. We'll get Andy's first couple of days thoughts. Andy's off to a very good start at the meet, and we'll get him in here. I've also got Dick Powell and Gary Young. We'll do another Del Mar conversation, but Andy's next. Stay with us.